UPS is currently hiring package handlers for its preload operation. Earn $13 an hour and receive up to $250 in weekly attendance bonuses while working up to a career as a package car driver. In as little as 6 months, you could have an opportunity to connect with customers and build lasting relationships in the community. Future you looks good in brown. Apply now at upsjobs.com or text brown to 33588. That's brown to 33588.
You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded! Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.
So, this is not Marcus Maben. This is not Bob Balvano. This is Dave Skull.
Yay.
Joined by Nick Valvano across from me, and our man Process is on the ones and twos back there for the time being.
Nick, are you deaf? Because, like, why is the headphone in here so high?
Because these
are the important questions.
Yeah, no, these headphones I'm using are broken. I'm pretty sure they helped guide Hueys to landing zones that were hot in the Vietnam War. And they're kind of broken. So,
sweet reference, bro.
Thank you.
I came back on and it was like, poof, and I was like, oh, God.
So I have to mess around with this thing.
Dude, that happens to me every time I plug in. I used to plug in over there at Jason's show. They would always be turned up all the way.
Yeah.
I don't know who's listening to it at that volume, but I worry about them. Whoever it was.
Well, this thing, I can't push it in all the way. Put that on the mixtape. Don't care. I have to jiggle it around and put it in just right. There it is. And then, then, it's still kind of low. So I have to crank it up. And I'm sorry, Process, for your eardrums.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we have a Chris Mack presser coming up in a few minutes.
I think he was talking to Patty Ice because I got no response there.
I was talking to Pete.
There we go.
All right. We'll have some reaction to that, absolutely, after that. And we might have a couple of special guests today.
Maybe. Who knows?
Maybe even.
Is Billy Reid one of them?
He was already here today. No.
But we will play that Drew Diener rant because that was funny.
Which one?
He ranted about.
That's the best question.
About, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, he asked me when I got on for trivia this morning, he asked me what my feelings were on and I was like, whatever they are, they aren't nearly as. I'm not nearly as passionate about it as you are.
No, he was. For sure. That was, and you know what? Everyone's got a peeve, man.
He's got several.
Mine is Bay. Like I don't like.
You don't like. You don't like Bay.
I still don't like Bay. It's. I've warmed up to it slightly, but I still just.
I don't think you need to.
Tell your significant other.
You're a
30-year-old
man. You don't need to use that word.
Hey, Bay. I don't even know how to use it.
She's boo.
And it's been around forever.
How about honey?
Oh, sweetie.
Those are all cute.
Sugar pants.
Sugar pants.
Nice.
If you want to get involved in the conversation, we'll take a few phone calls after the Chris Mack presser. 267-9680. The UPS Jobs text line is 437-9680. We're going to have some fun today. And yes, texter, it's Valvano and not Valvano. I say Valvano a lot, and I'm sorry.
You and everybody in
everybody
this,
else, everyone. Right? Like, every time.
Marcus did. Like, I'm not even upset about it. Like, I call myself, you know, what's your name? Nick Valvano? Oh, like, you know, I mean, I do it too. You
know, it's. I just love that this might be your dad texting in.
I hope not.
Valvano.
He's on an airplane right now, so I can't imagine the pilot's too stoked about that. Hey, Chucklehead, turn that thing off. I'm trying to land.
Go into airplane mode, buddy. Yeah. Anyway, so we'll have the Chris Mack presser in a couple minutes. Some interesting stuff from Marcus in the first hour. Sounded what I heard was a lot of talk about the Nike revelations in the not Nike trial.
Right.
Which is the biggest problem with this is that it's.
I almost feel like it would be like, I'm just trying to use an analogy. And as someone, and Chris Mack coming up, by the way, right here on ESPN 680-105. Something presented by our friends at Class Act Federal Credit Union. It's like straight A's for your money.
It's like straight A's for your money. I could use those.
Who couldn't use straight A's? Because my money is kind of like a C-plus right now.
My money does not get straight A's.
No. It's in the remedial classes.
D-plus. They don't like to give that grade out very often.
D-plus. I like D-plus. It just sounds cool. I feel like, what's the funniest grade? D-plus? I feel like
D-plus. It's D-plus.
D-plus.
That's why it was the
comedy.
Grade of Tommy Boy.
Yeah.
D-plus. They don't like to give that up very often.
It's Herbie Hancock.
Herbie Hancock.
Oh, God. Great movie. What was I saying? Okay. Analogy. I feel like it would be like going to court for a minor traffic infraction. You know, Sarah, you parked on the curb in a school zone. That's bad. Must go to court. Sorry, Judge. I parked on the curb in a school zone. Yeah, but... like someone in the audience would be like, yeah, but the report says that they pulled you over in a stolen vehicle with a bunch of dead hookers in the trunk. And it's like, yeah, but we're just here for the parking thing. So, yeah, all that other stuff, that's pretty messed up, right? And it would be like me admitting, yeah, I bought this from my friend, you know, Speedy Pete. Didn't know it was stolen and don't know who those hookers are that are dead in my back trunk.
Except they would probably bring you up on charges. So the analogy isn't completely the same.
No. I got to say dead hookers in my trunk like four times, so I had fun.
I gotta tell you, before the break and after the break, you've said hookers at least 8 times. I don't know if this is a normal occurrence.
No, we don't.
It feels like a lot. Like that usually is a word that we don't say that very often on the radio. Oh, is he on right now?
Yeah, Ryan McMahon.
Let's kick it to Ryan McMahon, and it'll lead right into the. Right into the Chris Mack Presser, brought to you by
Class Act Federal Credit Union. It's like straight A's for your money. Text 502-212-3167. Text ESPN to that number.
Nice.
And you can win weekly Visa gift cards.
All right.
Ryan McMahon.
At the our team, that's what Coach Mack likes to make our identities, toughness and defense. We have a goal to be a top 20 defensive team. And I think as of right now, we're 13th. So the thing about defense is, you know, you can always control it. You can be consistent with it, and sometimes you just can't control when the ball is going in the hole. But if you stick to your defensive principles, intensity, effort, energy, all that kind of stuff, all you have to do is be able to put the ball in the hole a little bit more than the other team, and you can still win games.
When you guys played zone at Boston College for a little bit, what was it like just having to actually use that for an extended period of time in a game? I know you guys had practiced it, but for you particularly?
Yeah, it was a little bit of a challenge just because we haven't practiced it much all year. But Coach Pitino used that a zone, not the same zone, but we played a lot more zone when he was here, so I have a little bit more experience than maybe some of the other guys on the team. In that, and then I think Coach was just kind of relying on my basketball IQ to be able to understand the defense despite us not practicing it very much. So I think that's why he wanted me out there.
How would you rate yourself as a defensive player, particularly considering where you were a couple of years ago?
I think I'm an above average defender. I mean, there's times where I can struggle against maybe quicker, more athletic guards, but there's so much more to defense than just on-ball defense, and a lot of people don't realize that. Another thing is just, you know, I see, you know, my lack of size. Sometimes guys shoot over me, but we're in one of the best conferences in the country, and I'm shorter than guys, and I shoot over guys that are taller than me. So you can nitpick any, you know, any part of someone's game defensively, but I take pride in being, you know, one of the higher defensive ratings when we chart things every game. I'm more concerned with my defensive rating after a game than I am with how many points I scored or how well I played in the offensive end, just because I know that's, in this system, how you stay on the court is just your defense. So I think I've definitely improved, especially since I was a freshman here. I think Coach Mack's system works a lot better for me than maybe Coach Pitino's, because you don't have to pressure the ball 94 feet and get out in passing lanes and, you know, and try to get steals and stuff like that. You just have to be solid and keep your man in front of you and make them take shots over the top of you.
Do you think this team's offense is getting better? And if so, how?
I don't know. I don't know about better. I think we might be sharing the ball a little bit better than we were at a midpoint in our season. But in the beginning of the season, I feel like we were like one of the top five offensive teams in the country. And we started facing some better competition and went through a little spurt where we were struggling to put the ball in the hole a little bit and had to rely on our defense a little bit more like we were talking about earlier. But we're kind of getting in our groove, getting back in rhythm. I think you're seeing how many weapons we have as a team, and that's going to be in our favor, especially towards the end of the year.
Go ahead. I was just following that up. One thing that hadn't been good in the last couple games is the turnovers. Yeah. What do you attribute that to, and how do you fix it?
You can attribute it to a lot of different things. The teams we're playing, the competition, the style that they play. But you can also attribute it to us just being careless with the ball. And it's not like we're trying to turn the ball over. But sometimes it just happens. And I think once we see a few possessions where we turn the ball over once or twice, I think we all have to hold ourselves accountable and really make sure that in the future possessions we are extra careful with the ball and maybe not make as many chances or take as many chances with the basketball and just get a decent shot up, because, you know, kind of like a lot of things in basketball, it can kind of snowball effect and it can get contagious. One guy's turned the ball over, then the other guy, and that's how you end up with 18 or something turnovers like we had in the last game. So we've been working on ball handling drills and taking care of the ball and everything in practice. So it's not like we're trying to turn the ball over, but I think that's been a strong suit of our team throughout the year, so we're going to get back to that.
Yeah, you mentioned you guys are 13th in a defensive measurement. Do you look at points per possession or defensive field goal percentage or points allowed, or what are the numbers that are important to you guys as a team?
I think Coach Mack just looks at the KenPom rating, defensive efficiency. That kind of encompasses all those things that you were just talking about, and really just ranks the teams in the country based on almost every defensive stat you can imagine. So we go by that, and it's pretty reliable, I think.
Was your goal to stay in the top 20?
Yeah, that was our goal in the beginning of the year. It was one of our many goals, is to stay in the top 20 defensively.
Which three-pointer did you get more excited about, your dribble backwards three or Josh Nickelberry's three?
Man, I got more excited over Josh's three, because I don't know if people realize how hard it is to sit an entire game and then go in there, get one shot, and to knock it down. Like, that's difficult, first of all. Second of all, I was happy for him because I know how hard he works in practice and what he brings to this team in terms of getting us ready for games and competing every day in practice and just getting us all better, which is going to make him better in the future. And then third, I know his family was in town because that's his home state. So, man, I was just happy he got to knock a shot down in front of his family.
The Florida State game over here, Brian, feels like a couple of lifetimes ago. Coach Mack came in and talked about being manhandled that day. How has that experience affected what's happened since and the winning streak that you're on?
I think it woke us up a little bit, you know, and getting punched in the mouth like that can kind of wake you up and realize that you got to take everybody as an elite opponent that can knock you on your ass any day. Sorry, excuse my language, but there's no really better way to say that. And when you're not ready for it or something like that happens, it really shocks you, kind of wakes you up. I mean, I think Coach Mack and our coaching staff does a great job of seeing what teams do defensively in terms of their defensive schemes, how they play ball screens, how they play off the ball, when there's a screen going on, all these different little things. And we have so many plays that they tend to run the plays that they think will be most effective based on that team's defensive schemes. So I think they put us in the best position to make those plays, and it's up to us to make the plays and make the shots. So our coaching staff watches a lot of film. They'll watch 9-10 games on a team before we even talk about them. So they put us in positions to succeed, and then, like I said, it's up to us to actually succeed.
Ryan, this is the time of year when people really start, you know, doing all the bracketology craziness, and you guys are repeatedly mentioned as fighting for a one seed. How do you guys handle that mentally? And obviously it's something you guys would want, but what's the approach, and how close of an eye do you keep on all that stuff?
Yeah, you try not to look too far in the future. It's inevitable that you're going to see some stuff. We all have social media. We all have family or people in our lives that have social media that reach out to us and say, you know, look at this. But we really try to take it one game at a time. Like right now we're strictly only focused on Wake Forest. So you take it one game at a time. Eventually you're going to be there, you know, waiting on to hear your name called and what seed you're going to be. We had a goal to be a top three seed, whether it was a 1, 2, or 3 this year. So we're definitely continuing to fight for that.
Ryan, do you guys, with the way that you guys can shoot the three, do you have a set number that you would like to make during a given game, and how big is that a opponent to your offense?
Yeah, believe it or not, we don't. Whether it's amount we want to make or amount we want to take, like, we don't have a set number. We really just try to take what the defense gives us. We do want to get the ball in the paint most of the time before we shoot a three. We don't want to just be passing the ball around the perimeter. Our offense is, you know, a big goal of our offense is predicated on getting the ball in the paint. So the coaches aren't necessarily ecstatic about us shooting threes when the ball hasn't really been penetrated into the lane that much. So, but like I said, like, they're comfortable with us being out there and reading the defense and whatever the defense is telling us. So some games that might tell us to shoot 33s, sometimes it might tell us to shoot 10 to 15. So it really just depends on how the defense is playing us.
Ron, was that one of those games when the first one went in, the basket seemed a little bit bigger? And Coach Murray mentioned maybe it was a little different. It was a different ball, I guess,
yeah.
The Adidas ball. Was there anything to that?
Yeah, I think, honestly, not a lot of people probably noticed it, but I shot a shot after the whistle, and it went in and out, and it felt really good. And I was kind of thinking to myself, like, all right, I got my unlucky in and out of the way. And my shot felt good, so I knew the next one. It gave me some confidence that when the next one came around, I was going to be able to knock it in. And then once that first one goes in, it's just a matter of getting open at that time.
Sorry, thank you. how does that help your confidence moving forward, shooting, having made 7 threes in that game?
I mean, it's definitely a confidence booster, but you got to approach every game like it's its own. Wake Forest isn't going to play the same defense that North Carolina State, you know, played, and they're not going to have the same guys on me that North Carolina State did. So every game is different. Every matchup is different. So it definitely gives me confidence. Nothing more gives you more confidence than seeing the ball go in the hole. But you know, every matchup's different. One more
here. After that game, you made your first 6 threes. I think 7 out of 10 it was. Do you go back and watch the video and look and see what was I doing right that day, or in terms of, you know, feet placement or squaring your shoulders or?
Yeah, I watch every game back, and whether I play good or bad, and it's usually just to see how I was on defense in terms of my positioning and my assignments, whether or not I missed them. I try to pretty much predict what I'm going to get from a defensive rating when they chart all the stuff. But in a game like that, you can't help to watch the shots that you make and, you know, what was I doing different this game. And I think I was getting hit on time and on target a lot by our guards. Like, they were hitting me in the money spot, like, very early. I wasn't having to wait an extra half a second or anything like that. They were doing an incredible job of getting me the ball and just finding me in rhythm. And I think, you know, maybe my feet were more set or I was ready for the ball more. I don't know, but I could tell just from shooting around, like, I felt good that day in terms of just my form and how much I saw the ball going in.
Thanks, Ryan.
All right.
All right, that was Ryan McMahon's press conference, brought to you by our friends at Class Act Federal Credit Union. It's like straight A's for your money.
No Coach Mac?
No Coach Mac. No. Coach Mac coming up probably in about 5 minutes or so.
Okay. All right.
Ryan McMahon said the word.
They have to trade chairs.
Yes, they do. It's usually about 5 minutes. And then, yeah, so stay tuned here. We'll have Chris Mack's.
I like
conference.
When they talk to Ryan, though. He's he always has good answers.
Yeah.
In-depth answers. And he's been around for three coaches. So,
He's got a perspective
on
all
He's got a perspective on basketball. We asked him about the zone defense. He said, you know, I played it under Coach Rick Pitino. So, you know, I knew
it's been interesting.
I knew something about it already. And guys like that have to kind of probably guide the younger folks in the practices and implementing the zone.
Yeah, it was interesting hearing, like, you know, the goals they had going into the into the season on defense, and also his
top
development
efficiency.
Yeah, his development as a defender. I mean, he even said it. He was like, look, an athletic guy, I'm not necessarily going to be able to keep up with, but his lateral movements and stuff, kind of like Jordan too. The two of them, but Brian, I mean, used to just be, he was like a Will Scott, just came in and was a three-point shooter. And
Will Scott, nice pull.
I know, right? Not bad there, not bad there. That's a little bit blast from the past. Not super old, but you know what I mean.
About 10 years.
Yeah, about 10, yeah, that's a good point. I think I was a freshman in college, maybe? I'm not sure. Anyway, but now he's, you know, he's a legitimate, well-rounded player.
But he knows his limitations, like you talked about,
yeah.
It, because that's the thing, is that defense, like ratings wise, when you look at his numbers, he's actually throughout the first two thirds of the season, or the first half of the season, he was our best or one of our best defenders by the numbers, which a lot of people were kind of incredulous about, you know, because it's Ryan. And they look at him like, well, he's not known for his defense, and he's small, and he's not that fast, and come on. But he really does do well against guys that, you know, aren't tall and athletic and fast.
Like, right.
When we play Florida State and Kentucky, you know, he struggles a little bit on with the matchups, but and he can also do well in the, you know, he would thrive in his zone probably more than a man-to-man situation.
Absolutely. Okay, Chris Mack at the podium.
There you go.
Like, awesome. Brought to you by Classite Federal Credit Union.
Chris, are you satisfied with the way your offense is functioning at this point? And along those lines, the turnover situation, what can you address? How can you address that?
Well, I mean, we're scoring the ball better, but, you know, at the same time, we've had a few games in a row where we've turned the ball over too much. And, you know, it's been a focus of ours here in practice. We have to be a little bit more patient at times. We have to be able to make better decisions. You know, take what the defense gives us, play longer into the clock, know who we're passing the ball to and what situation, you know, we're putting our teammate in. Talking about, you know, reducing it by 8 to 10, but, you know, 3 to 4. And, you know, I think that by and large we've been a pretty good team with the ball all year. And, you know, I didn't think NC State's pressure was suffocating. We need to do a better job. And that's, like I said, been a focus in practice.
There have been a couple games where maybe you start off with a lot of turnovers in the first few minutes, but then are able to pare it down as time goes on. Is that, do you think it's just players kind of starting off a little too excited and getting too fast, or what's the
maybe
deal with that?
I mean, it really doesn't matter to me what the reason is. We just have to cut them down, and we've talked about it, and I think that was one of the most frustrating things. We really talked about it, you know, coming in into the game against NC State, and sometimes you prove more prophetic. And but again, we're going to continue to try to clean it up, and hopefully it's not a bugaboo and something that holds us back, but it will if we don't correct it.
Chris, a month ago today, you came in here and talked about getting manhandled by Florida State. You haven't lost since. What did that game do for your team, both emotionally and maybe from an X's and O's standpoint?
I mean, Florida State's really good. You know, I don't think, you know, going into the game, I felt the same way. I felt they were a terrific team. I thought they shot the ball extremely well that day. Their length bothers everybody they play. They deny. I thought we got good shots. That was our goal. But as I said, you know, in many press conferences, you know, we're going to continue to try to get better no matter what the result is. I don't think something all of a sudden clicked. I really don't. I think our team's been, you know, locked in on trying to improve in practice, learning from games, getting better. I thought we got a shot of confidence in those first couple road games immediately after, where, you know, we had a lead or we were battling from behind, and, you know, we were able to sort of gut check it out. And I think that's really helped our team in those type of environments, and we've continued to get better in a lot of areas. Well, it starts with I think knowing what we want as a team. You know, not everyone has a license to shoot transition threes. You know, we want Ryan and Jordan to take looks when they're open in transition. But those other guys, you know, with their percentage, haven't really earned that right. And I think we can get a better shot. And our guys have bought into that. You know, I think we've always been a team that's, you know, really made the right play or tried to share the ball. I think we're a really good passing team and a team that plays the right way. And you can want that as a coach all you want, but I think you have to have some maturity in your locker room and some selfless guys on the team, and I believe we have that.
You were an assistant coach at Wake for 3 or so years, a long way down the line. How did those years kind of help you grow? Did you enjoy that time and all that?
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. You know, a big part of it is who you're working with, you know, whether it's the coaching staff and being under Skip. But it's also the administration and fellow coaches. You know, the area is beautiful. The school's a terrific school. I really enjoyed my time. You know, you could live 10 miles from Wake and take you 10 minutes to get there. It was great. And that was my first year of marriage with my wife. It was on our last year at Wake. And, you know, we sort of enjoyed our time, just the two of us. Out in the middle of Winston-Salem, North Carolina, we had a lot of success during that time. You know, coaching guys like Josh Howard and Darius Singalia and Chris Paul and, you know, Justin Gray. I mean, it was really, really fun time.
Chris, what do you see in those guys on film? They've been close in some games that they've lost, and then they did beat Clemson the other day.
Yeah, they've played everybody, you know, outside of Duke, tooth and nail, and I think they've got some much improved players from a year ago. I think Olivier Saar may be the most improved guy in the conference, you know, at least top two or three. And he's a focal point. They use him an awful lot in high-low situations, both as the finisher and as the passer. At times he'll play the four, so it makes it even more of a challenge. Brandon Childress is just a very, very heady point guard, a guy that can score it, can pass it, really knows how to control a game. And I think, you know, the other players are getting Sean D back, who's, you know, I think a really good scorer for them. So, you know, they had a lot of new parts to start the year, whether it's freshmen or grad transfers. And I think, you know, they're sort of finding their stride, and we have to make sure that we're ready to go tomorrow night.
Anyone else?
I'm curious, you used to coach high school basketball, and I'm curious your thoughts on if you think a shot clock would ever be good in the high school basketball game.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's necessary. I mean, I just think that, you know, for those kids that want to play at the next level in college, I mean, they're going to get experience, understand how to play in that situation. And then, you know, you go to some high school games and teams hold the ball for 2 or 3 minutes. Just, you know, I know I understand why it hasn't, but I think it's time.
Coach, I remember last year you said, I think this time of year you guys do kind of keep an eye on the standings a little bit. Just wondering how that dynamic changes at all, if it does, with where you are and kind of handling the pressure of being in the conversation of a one seed right now.
We don't worry about that. You know, we certainly look at the college standings, but, you know, we looked at them after one game. So, you know, every game counts the same. You know, they don't say, well, you get more points because you beat a better team, or it doesn't count as much. Every game, you know, gives you an opportunity to win a conference championship. And so, you know, as far as the seeding for the big tournament, we don't care about that. Thank you.
All right, that was Coach Chris Mack. Let's go ahead and take a break and reset real quick, and then we'll come back with some reaction. I am joined.
There's a new body in the By God, that's Phil Baker's music.
Well, I was in the middle of saying that when you just stumbled in.
My headphones weren't plugged in, and I didn't jiggle them the right way.
Phil Baker,
look,
that's not how I sound.
This is how we do things on the weekend. The seventh highest rated sports talk show. We wouldn't expect anything less.
Attaboy. All right, let's go ahead and take that break. And on the other side, I'll be joined by that voice you just heard, the fabulous Phil Baker. This is ESPN 680 105.7. Welcome back into the V Show. I am your host today, Dave Skull, joined by the fabulous Phil Baker.
Desperation is a stinky cologne, and you found yours truly.
That's right. That's right.
That was beautiful.
No, if desperation is leads me to you, that's a cologne I want to wear, pal.
Comes in Axe body spray as well, too.
I want to say something poignant now, too.
No, you can't.
I like you guys.
Hey. Nikki, we love you.
Yes. So. But yes, we're getting reps this week, man. We did the post-game show on Saturday. We did our Sunday morning show. If you listen, 10 to noon, Sunday, we'll plug it. Nick Kern, the voice of Louisville women's basketball.
There you go.
Patty Ice helping us out. Man, it was a good time Sunday. We had Team USA in town. Saw, I can say it now, they're probably flying to Serbia. Saw Sue Bird roaming the streets by the Omni. Pretty cool. So
pretty
yeah,
sweet.
But yeah,
it's pretty sweet when you have some of the greatest, you know, women's basketball players in the world, really all of the greatest, with the exception of a couple of the ones that aren't on the team right now, roaming the streets of Louisville, and
12,000 plus. I saw that. I know Nick Kern was very happy, so be sure to listen to. Yeah, so you were one of the 12,000. Nick Kern and Jeff Walls will be out at Mark's Feet Store later today doing the Jeff Walls show. Awesome. Listen on 93.9 The Ville.
There you go. Good plug. And obviously, everybody knows Louisville basketball is back in action tomorrow. Cards taking on Wake Forest. And for the most coverage, keep it locked on ESPN Louisville. Join Marcus Maben and Steve Rummage for the Louisville basketball pregame show at 8 p.m. on all ESPN Louisville stations. And then immediately after the game, it's the Coors Light postgame show. We're the first place in town that will take your calls. You'll hear live from Coach Chris Mack, player sound, and more. Do we know who's doing the postgame tomorrow?
I believe Steve and Marcus. Usually they have the home games, though, so they'll probably be over at Al Jay's, I believe, on Wednesday. And I know they're going to be at Impellizzeri's on Main Street on Saturday for the Virginia postgame show.
The exciting, 11:15 postgame show.
I think it's, is it a 6 o'clock?
I'm talking about tomorrow night.
Oh, tomorrow night. Oh, yeah.
9 o'clock.
Gonna be, yeah. That's going to be extremely, extremely late on that front. But like Steve Rubbich said, he'll get to the calls. He'll get the reaction. Hopefully it is a blowout win for his Cardinals. And
everybody, you know, once they get home, they just go to sleep.
It's crazy how that works. It's an interesting social experiment as we navigated the waters for the postgame show on Saturday to see how we had a ton of text, but then a 20-point win. Nobody has anything to complain about. Everybody's excited. So it's interesting.
They all hold it in until Monday.
Exactly.
And then they call the shows.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I mean, we got a good amount of traction on some, but you get a loss or Kentucky loss. I mean, Louisville fans are listening to the Kentucky postgame show. It's a fascinating. I love seeing how the sausage is made in terms of how fans react to that. So
see, I usually don't listen to the Kentucky postgame, but every once in a while, like, I watched the end of the Auburn-UK game on Saturday, and I got in my car to go to Kroger, and I was like, well, you know, James and Jason are my buddies, and I know Terry as well, so I was like, yeah, I'll turn it on and see how they're doing, and it's just like, you know, Rome is burning. Like, all right, buddy. Okay. Sorry.
Their reactions to it, I believe you played it, or Mitchell Hannigan played it yesterday. On the take, but just James Strebel getting worked up.
Oh, it's amazing. When Strebel gets worked up, it's so great.
It's one of my favorite
things.
What's
better, Angry Diener or Super Saiyan Strebel? Because I
don't know.
Strebel really, it's funny because Diener, I feel like.
Diener gets worked up on things that, like with grammar and some of it rightfully so. I'm not gonna say, but Strebel like that's calling it, yeah. Jay Billis a leg humping hack,
which is ridiculous.
That was some of the best.
It's
audio
hilarious to me because like Jay Billis, I feel like is the best in the game and is one of the least biased people out there.
And he
can't stand him.
I don't know what's better, seriously, because you're right. Diener gets mad about inanimate objects and silly crap. And it's kind of more
corporations.
Organic.
It gets pretty, yeah. Thing is, you can get James. Like I've heard Andy on, you know, when he has James on, like poke the stick at him, and basically be like, "All right, get angry," and then James will get angry.
And he just digs himself bigger. and I'm just like, stop.
But it almost always ends with some kind of slam on U of L.
I mean, he should finish every sentence with L's down for sure.
He's my buddy. But it's funny when he doesn't have a U of L co-host, a lot of times he'll get pretty hardcore on. And that's what happened on Saturday. Like not him, but it was two of the three callers I heard were like, "Well, at least we still beat the bums on Floyd Street." And I was like, "Guys, come on, man.
That's the thing. Like if you watch Dragon Ball, like Goku's like this fun loving, golly gee, you know, let's have a good fight. And then he goes Super Saiyan, starts wrecking things.
Well, to be fair, James didn't say that. You know, it was two of the callers that said that. You know, James was angry at Calipari.
But that's the thing. He's so nice. Like seriously,
I love doing radio with him. I think the two of us have a good rapport, and like we like going back and forth. You know, and he's, you know, he takes his fangs out usually when we play when we're playing together.
That's what I have to tell some of my buddies. They get really upset at him or Blanket Baker. I'm just like, it's wrestling, brother.
Yeah,
like, it's his shtick. Like you're
feeding the beast.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You getting worked? I was like, they're great guys off the air, man. Like that's how you have to operate. But man, they get worked up. I get the same text every week. Rinse, repeat. They come down the text line from me. It's like, they're not going anywhere.
Like,
man.
Dude, Blanket Baker, that's his shtick. Like he hates officiating.
Yes, all. Shtick.
In all sports, like he could watch rugby for the first time ever and be like, these refs are garbage. Like you'll watch water polo and be like, that's ridiculous. That's a terrible call. Yeah, because that's his shtick, you know, and he's sticking with it.
It's the brand that he's built.
Yeah, and he loves to rib Clemson fans, which it's hilarious that they get worked up because they're the kings of college football. They are the undisputed kings of the ACC.
Louisville, come on, don't get mad at
you got somebody like, you know, poking you about pumping sound in your stadium, and it gets them riled up every time. And he doesn't care. Like, so you can make five or six parody accounts, and he thinks it's hilarious. He's just like, whatever. Yeah,
well, Mark also one of the nicest guys here. Oh, I kind of want
to. Do you know I love Mark? He's my guy.
I kind of want to put up a Twitter poll. Who's the best, Salty Diener, or who do you like angry the best? Salty Diener, Super Saiyan Strebel, or Mark Blankenbitter? I kind of want to see because the three of them get the angriest the most.
Yeah,
and I feel like it's fun. Also, I made something, and I don't know if they ever played it on the take.
What'd you make?
I made.
What? I made. Give me like thing. A. Synopsis.
I made this thing. I took Strebel's take on Khalil Whitney, and I mixed it to Dragon Ball Z, and I made it sound like he was powering up and turning into.
You know,
Super
I love
Saiyan.
You. I love your nonsense. So please, if you want to play that,
if it's
I'm okay
up,
with
yeah.
it.
Yeah, yeah. Why right, not? Cool. We're filling space.
Let's do it.
You're going to love this. Trust me. What you're seeing now is my normal state.
He got up and got a putback dunk. That's it. That's all he's done.
This is a Super Strebel. And this is what is known as a Super Strebel that has ascended past a Super Strebel.
Go to the NBA Combine, and he's going
to
be, if he's invited.
He had to get invited, exactly, yeah.
And he's
going to
be massively disappointed because no one's going to want him.
Or you could just call this a Super Strebel 2. And this...
What's he doing?
Is to go even further beyond.
He can't play basketball. He can't play basketball. He's a fraud. He's a complete fraud. He came in as a top 15 recruit, and he doesn't want to work. He thinks Cal should just play him. I should just be able to play because I was really good in high school. The thing that's surprising about Khalil Whitney, you understood when Sasha Kalea Jones transferred.
No, stop it, Strebel.
You got it when Quade Green transferred. They were McDonald's All-Americans, but they weren't lottery picks, you know, before the season started. They weren't lottery picks. They weren't top 15 guys. This is a top 15 McDonald's All-American that was in the lottery mock draft before the season started. He is completely fallen out of that. He's an afterthought. Nobody thinks he can play. congratulations, Khalil Whitney. Go watch your two highlights from this season and enjoy the G League or Europe next year. That's all.
It's unreal. How is he generating that much power?
I saw the light bulb go off when Nick was like, I got an idea. And then he just ran to a studio. And then I was like, what are you playing? And then that's the finished product. That's awesome.
That's absolutely amazing.
I had so much fun with that.
I really liked that, just for the record. That was hilarious.
Thank you. Thank
Especially
you.
The Super Streeble. That's amazing. And you need to be able to, like, you got to get that played for Streeble at some point.
As soon as the honk sound went off the horn, the first tweet that came up, and I'm sorry if this has already been touched on, Tim Sullivan tweeting out, any current or former Louisville Ladybirds or parents want to weigh in on the weird twist of Todd Sharp's story? Want to hear from all sides? Message me at tsullivan@couriergernal.com. So, sorry. That was the first thing that came up, and it was in perfect in sync.
Perfect timing.
Yes.
Real slick, Tim. Just trying to get, inviting the Ladybirds into your DMs. Yeah, like that, you know, I've tried that before.
I'm writing a story, too. So many stories.
I'm writing a really important story about the Ladybirds. Please DM me so it's not creepy.
I love people also. Yeah. I don't know how to navigate the water. Is that a sports story? Because
it's sports adjacent. Yes, you know what I mean? Like, because the Ladybirds are so present and they're so prominent in the Louisville community because they're so good.
He was on Lifetime.
Yeah, they're 20-time national champion, whatever. We win the championship every year. And they're a part of every game day experience. And Todd Sharp was very public
because he's a coach.
So Sharp? Is that the name of the show?
I want to say yes.
Okay. It's all very sad, whatever's going on,
yeah,
you know, because
okay.
I liked Coach Sharp. You know, we interacted several times, and obviously he was good at his job, but the whole thing is just, it's bizarre, the stories that are coming out, and I would probably wait to comment too much until we hear exactly what happened.
That's what Sullivan's trying to do, get both
sides.
Yeah,
and we get the police report at the end of the day, you know what I mean, in some kind of official capacity, because right now there's a lot of hearsay, and there's a lot of rumors floating around, and I'm not even sure what's been officially reported.
Yeah, I heard two different things. One was he was getting out of an Uber, and then the other one was it was actually in, like, the Courier reported was actually inside the Marriott.
Yeah, so who knows, man. So we'll probably put a pin in that one, but I hope he's okay, because some of the stories we're hearing are bizarre and erratic. So
yeah, I heard rumblings of it over the weekend, but yeah, you never know what is true or not on that front. But yeah, so I wonder if there will be a season two of that show, but it sounds like there will not.
No, well, I mean, he's not the coach anymore.
Exactly. So, yeah, I don't think that's going to get picked up.
Yeah. But just to touch on the press conference a little bit, we were talking about how intelligent Ryan sounds, you know, and very – I always love when he does, you know, the press conference himself, and he's the player at the podium, because he always gives you good answers, you know. And I love that he touched on Nickelberry. They asked him about the Nickelberry three, and I thought that was one of the cool moments from the game on Saturday. You know, Josh being able to hit a three in front of his home crowd, yeah, basically in North Carolina.
And I know we're inching closer to the top of the hour, so I'm assuming Nick will probably want to go to break and reset that. But no, I completely agree. That was kind of a common theme on the post.
A lot of assumptions there, Phil.
Yeah, okay. It's the V show. Yes, you are right. A lot of assumptions. But that was a common theme on the postgame show, the Coors Light postgame show on Saturday with Kern, Pat, and I. We were talking about how many times, like, it was a common theme for Ryan McMahon to be almost the scapegoat for a lot of the struggles. They're 19-3 early on the season. Defensively, he can't keep up with these guys. You know, obviously it goes back to the Kentucky game, mm-hmm, where he was still in the game. People wanted to see the shiny new toy and David Johnson and being in there. But when Ryan is shooting the ball like that and hitting those shots and doing a lot of good things, like he alluded to being an average defender.
He said he was above average. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that's
the numbers actually bear that out.
Oh, Kern. Yeah. Nick Kern blindly defends him. People get into it with him because they saw the shiny new toy in David Johnson, yeah, and what he was able to do. And looking the part of being that athletic guard, that's the bigger guard that a lot of Louisville fans have been clamoring for. I mean, even going back when Denny was here.
Well, it's also the type of big guard that you need in the – the pack line.
Exactly.
You know, to deny the ball at the top of the key.
And so. I thought it was interesting, you all alluded to it with his comment about Rick Pitino and Nick saying that he played for three different coaches, yeah, David Padgett and Chris Mack, but this may be able to fit what Ryan McMahon is able to do. So, yeah, to your point, it's when he's shooting the ball like that, and you like to see that, especially everything that has transpired here and everything, to see a fifth-year guy like that, it's pretty cool to see.
And Wayne's redshirt year was under Pitino. So, yeah. I mean, he's been privy to, well, hit four different coaches for him because he played at UNC. Was it Greensboro or Asheville? It was UNC Asheville. Yeah. UNC Asheville. He's had the benefit of playing in different systems and seeing different defenses. So when it comes to implementing the zone and when they switch to that, fifth-year guys like Ryan and Dwayne are big parts of that.
Yeah, and I think to go back to what you talked about, just him explaining the games and everything, and I know a lot of we see on the text line coming down there at 437-9680 if you want to interact with the show on the UPS Jobs
text line. Yeah.
If you want to interact with it that way, just seeing some of the cliche quotes that were coming down of saying, you know, Ryan was doing that. But I feel like he gives some answers that were pretty good of what a lot of Louisville fans were wanting to hear as far as, you know, 20-point win, NC State's back was against the wall, and if you're looking at bracketology, Joe Lunardi just released, there's only three ACC teams projected in right now.
That's insane.
That's crazy.
I never in a million years, we talked about this yesterday, never in a million years, especially with the ACC being at 15 teams.
Exactly.
And almost every single team is a basketball-centric university with the exception of Florida State and Clemson. Like, I never in Notre Dame, but Notre Dame's traditionally good at basketball too. I never in a million years would have thought they'd have 20% of their teams as locks.
And I think at times because people
never would have thought it'd be under five. Down year.
Look, I thought it was going to be just rinse repeat with the Big East, which you used to see with that. But
which, like, the low was six, I think.
Exactly.
And usually it was eight or nine. Yeah.
And I think what people tend to go back to, and this was a common theme on the post game show on Saturday, is just how big of a win that was for Louisville when you thought NC State back against the wall, trying to make that big win so they can make it an opportunity to say, hey, we're going to go into the dance too. But right now, I mean, the ACC has three teams listed in there, and a lot of people tend to throw a blanket over, say, just college basketball is down and the ACC is down. But Louisville's taking advantage of it. So you could say whatever.
Our best conference start ever, you know.
Yeah. So I think you just – people it, – it's very weird to kind of measure where Louisville fans – how excited they get with wins, because I feel like just a mere 2 or 3 weeks ago, a month ago, the sky was falling when they lost to Florida State.
Yeah. Well, that's how it was combined with the Kentucky loss, I feel like. And the whole fan base has a mental, and for good reason, has something with the Kentucky game. You know, kind of a hang up, and they're sick of losing it. And every time we lose that game, you know, the fan base takes a hit as for mentally, you know,
the Ethan Moore syndrome, as I say, where you're taking a walk during the game.
Exactly. Like, watch it later if we win. No, but that combined with the Florida State game, it was like, oh, this is all over again, and David wasn't playing yet, and Samuel saw his minutes go down from the beginning of the season, and we, you know, weren't seeing any results from the freshman class, and it was like, you know, they were getting antsy. They were getting antsy with the rotation. They were getting antsy with the playing the bigger athletic teams, like – and then I feel like you can only – what I've been saying for the last couple of weeks is you can only really evaluate this team like AD after David. You know, once they started playing David Johnson – and Chris Mack knows his team better than we do. I'm sure he wasn't all the way back from his shoulder injury. I'm sure he wasn't – you know, at some point he looked at it and said their defensive deficiencies at this point are worth it to have them on the court, you know, for the offense, the ball movement, et cetera, and they've gotten much better defensively since that point. You can't really evaluate this team before they started playing David Johnson and Samuel Williamson extended minutes. I feel like you have to go from that moment forward. And from that moment forward,
I think Ryan hit his fifth three, and then David was running the point, and then attacked the I'm trying to think which fashion that happened. He threw the oop to Stephen Enoch, and then he drove to the basket. When you have that many tools, and I know a lot of people tend to go back to Jordan Wara and his up and downs, had 37 the game prior, but when you have, like, who's going to be the go-to guy, that was a common question that I feel like a lot of Louisville fans had earlier in the season, and then now it's not just Jordan. It's Marcus Maben said in the pregame show that he didn't feel like Dwayne Sutton needed to have a big game to beat NC State. He had 4-4 and was in foul trouble. Yeah. And that's what I think can potentially make this team really scary at come March time, because it's not just Jordan Ward. Now, he's going to get his, but they were focusing in on him. I felt like Kevin Keats did a really good job of making sure that he wasn't going to be. Now, he's still got
9
double
rebounds.
Exactly.
You know, like, but he finds other ways to affect the game.
And that wasn't happening. I mean, that was a common theme that we heard on our Sunday show post the Kentucky game, is that tip-in that almost went down in regulation in the Kentucky game. Jordan was just staring at that. Yeah. So I feel like that's been a point of emphasis for Chris Mack and the coaching staff. When the ball isn't going through the hoop, how he's able to manage and control some of the things that he control. And I think that's, you have to be very, very excited if you're a Louisville fan with that big win on Saturday.
Oh, I think it's a huge positive, and I try not to be over the top, but I think it's a huge positive that we've had 5 different leading scorers in the last 5 games. You know, like that's huge to me. Ryan McMahon is essentially, at this point in the season, our 9th option on offense, and he scored 23 points on Saturday. That's a good problem to have. That's a great attribute for this team, that Jordan Wara doesn't score. Like, it's great to have a go-to scorer. You need to have one. You need to have a guy where you can put the ball in his hand and say, go get us a bucket right now, and most of the time he can convert. That's great. But it's also, depth isn't necessarily the issue when it comes to March. It's really not. You don't necessarily need to have more than 7 or 8 guys. Most teams don't play more than 7 or 8 guys the majority of their minutes, but you need to have depth of scoring options. That's what people don't talk about enough, is you need to have 4 or 5 guys that can go get you 15 points. And right now, we've got 9 that could possibly get you 15 points. And that's a great thing. That's a great thing. Like, Jordan doesn't have to have a big night, but he also showed the other night at Boston College that he can still have that big night.
And that's what I think makes it this team potentially a threat. And I think
I'm getting really excited about the potential of this team. I really am. I know. Well, I'm getting in the Valvano mode. And see, did you hear that, Nick? I said it right.
Valvano?
I did.
Yeah, were you getting on Marcus? Was he saying it incorrectly?
No, everybody does. And Marcus was doing me a favor. Yeah, that's actually a real great move. Have the guy come in, do an extra
hour. I thought that's what it was coming. Look, Marcus.
No, it was a texter that immediately, like, 1 minute into my hosting duties was like, it's Valvano, not Valvano. I was like, all right, I'm sorry. I know it is, but I keep, like, I'm used to, you know, like, I took Spanish, you know,
right,
all through school, and that's what my background's in. So when I see the A, I hear the aw sound. You know what I mean? And
that's fair.
Italian's different. It's a different. No, you know,
it's okay.
Look, I'm very Anglo. I'm Irish German. You're gonna have to hold my hand.
We all are.
You speak like a non-Anglo though.
I appreciate that.
Wow, I don't know if that came out right.
No,
anyway,
look, I was told by native Spanish speakers that I have a very good accent for a white person. Like, hey, thanks, man. Or lack of accent. So there you go.
So you're not Blanco Biscuit?
Oh, I'm Blanco. I'm Blanco as hell.
As am I.
Let's hit an ID.
So do you have any thoughts on the Wake Forest game tomorrow, on the matchup?
Well, I heard Marcus and Steve talking about this a little bit in Lock 2 when I was bouncing back and forth. And I think one of the things for this game, that it should just be a business game for them. It's a 9 o'clock game. It has the opportunity and I guess possibility, if you will, for this team to be sleepy, if you will, in Wake Forest coming in. 9 o'clock game, KFC Yum Center. You're seeing $9 tickets tweeted out by the university on that. So I think they're kind of seeing the temperature in the room that maybe it's not going to be the most attended game, and you got a Wednesday game. So
Wednesday 9 o'clocks are tough downtown. They just are.
And you have
Friday 9 o'clocks are different.
Oh, that would be a Thursday even. I feel like people would kind of maybe take a 4-day week. But I think with this, they're at the bottom of the league, and I know the ACC isn't the ACC of old, but it's one of those things. You just take care of business against a team like that. I know that's not really great analysis, but if you're supposed to be right now, is it Joe Lunardi? We'll get into bracketology here in a second. Joe Lunardi just tweeted out. I know Mike DeCourcy is coming on with Andy around 5 o'clock, and he has his own bracketology as well that we can go over. But Louisville, number 2 seed right now, and the Midwest and St. Louis, and then with Kansas, the number 1
seed.
I use
a 10, right? Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah. I use a 10, so I know I saw the Jack Griesman.
So actually,
Jack Griesman. I kind of like that. It makes him sound like a bad guy in the 80s.
teen comedy.
Just the
Jack
bully.
Jack Griezmann. Yeah,
he's like the nerds in love with the girlfriend, and then but she's dating Jack Griezmann.
Jack
star
Griezmann.
Quarterback. Has a convertible, gives Jack a wave when he's
damn,
with the girlfriend, only to
Jack
turn
Griezmann
around and being flicked off.
What has he got that I don't got? Anyway.
All-around
a Mustang.
DB, QB.
Has a mullet.
But anyway, IU was what, 10 in that?
10, I just exited out of it. Yeah, so you had BYU as the 7 seed in St. Louis. IU the 10, the fight.
So not in a playing game. So at this point, you could say, quote, kind of comfortably in, even though the 10 seed's not that comfortable. You know, you could say they're not in the last four in. You know,
Big
not,
10 is projected from Joe Lunardi to have 11 teams in. Let that sink in.
But it's only the Big 10. Got to change that name.
I know.
11 out of 14 teams, that's insane. That's insane.
What was the record?
It's 11 from the Big 11. East.
It was 11.
Yeah, yeah, it was 11.
So right
the
now,
East.
The rundown, you have the Big 10 with 11 teams. SEC, you have 6. Pac-12 at 5. Big 12 at 5. Big East at 5. The American at 4. God, you're getting to the bottom West Coast. Jeez. At 3. The A-10 at 3. And the ACC at 3.
See, I think that one of those teams, either NC State or Virginia, is going to put up enough quality wins, probably Virginia, to be the fourth team.
Right now on the bubble, this is according to Joe Lunardi, he just tweeted out about an hour ago on ESPN.com. You have Rhode Island as the on the bubble, last four byes. Indiana, Florida, Oklahoma, last four in. Mississippi State, Purdue, VCU, and Penny Hardaway's Memphis team. First four out, you have Virginia, Minnesota, and Richard Pitino. East Tennessee State, Xavier, and then the next four out is Cincinnati, Alabama, Georgetown, and Utah State.
See, Virginia is the most likely to be that fourth team at this point. And they're also playing a little better, and they got that signature win against Florida State. We have to avoid losing. That's the thing about Louisville right now, is that Louisville, Duke, and Florida State are really the only opportunities for these teams that are on the bubble to make hay down the stretch in the ACC to really catch the committee's attention and get a resume building win. So we've got a big target on our back down the stretch, and we play Virginia twice, and they're the biggest bubble team in the ACC right now.
Rick Bozich at WDRB, he's on Thursdays with Ada. He just put out a story on WDRB.com. How close is the University of Louisville to a number one seed? The Cardinals have surged through the midway point of the ACC with the lead. They have should be favored in the 8 of their final 9 in ACC regular season games, starting with Wake Forest. But right now, it looks like the bracket projections tilt toward a number 2. Do they have the ability to potentially get to that number 1 seed?
I don't think so.
They're
going to
need
some
help. They're going to need some help.
That's the thing. Like, I don't think the strength of our resume right now, other than the sheer volume of wins, is the fact that we don't have a bad loss. But at the end of the day, if you don't have the high-end wins, they've shown in the last couple of years that it's more about who you beat, not who you lost to. Like they've been pretty consistent with that.
Well, and it's going to be tough for anybody to beat San Diego State, Gonzaga.
There's really, and Locke was talking about this morning, there's really three of the one seeds are locked up at this point. We have to root for either Baylor or Kansas to lose to each other, but the same one lose each game. You know what I mean? Like maybe drop another game. I don't see enough opportunity down the stretch for Louisville to get those quad one wins, enough of them to be a one seed.
And I know Drew's been up to Indianapolis for the bracket and the seeing how the sausage is made with the seating and everything. By the way, Joe Lunardi was on with Ennis and Luke last week, completely disagree with some of the things that he said, but he was a good interview. But just talking about they don't look for storylines and things like that. Luke, to his credit, because I was on a 5-minute delay, and I was like feverishly texting Ennis and Luke and Patty, and they were already off the air. But just talking about Luke brought up talking about Steve Masiello, yeah, when they played there, and then I mean Richard Petito last year. You'll never convince me that you couldn't have moved one of those other teams around.
Every single year there are storylines, even down to the point where we played Murray State or Morehead State. Yeah. Like if there is a chance for there to be a storyline, they have it. They have the matchup every single year.
So,
how often is Kentucky in our bracket in the last 10 years? Like it's happened multiple times. It's just not by accident.
Speaking of which, you talked about Locke having on Chip Patterson earlier. He alluded to the Jerry Palm of CBS Sports talking. He doesn't have Kentucky in the top 16. They're a 6 seed in his bracket. Joe Lunardi had UK at a 5 seed. And then Bracketville, which is another top bracket site, has Kentucky as a number 5 seed as well. But just curious to monitor that. I know this time of year we're refreshing constantly, seeing each and every week. I know Joe Lenardi's up to.
There's so much basketball down the stretch, though. There's so much left to be played.
You could go, you could climb multiple seeds. You could do, you could fall multiple seeds. But it's just, I know we sound rinse, repeat, and sound like we're just saying the same thing over and over again. I cannot believe the ACC is only projected to have 3 teams in that.
It's incredible to me. I think we're going to end up at 4 and outside chance at 5, but I think it's going to be 4 with Virginia. I think that's what's going to happen. But it's far from a lock right now.
And another thing that you alluded to with like needing some help from Baylor, Nick and I do this, Nick Kern, on Sunday Morning Hangover on Sundays. We tend to do this leading closer to Selection Sunday. It's one of my favorite things to do with the blind resumes, team A, team B, because far too often, and I know Chip Patterson alluded to this, far too often, Baylor doesn't necessarily get the respect that a lot of teams, like if it were a Duke or a Kentucky, and they're a one seed, but I just feel like the national narrative for Baylor is like, oh, it's Baylor. You know, it's just interesting to me. It's like, okay, here's team A, here's team B, and then what? Just don't even look at the name on the front of the jersey. And I know that it's just something fascinating to monitor as Selection Sunday inches closer. I just think that far too often a lot of teams just kind of get lumped into, oh, you know, Baylor can't be in that. National champion, it's going to be the blue bloods of the world, but just that Chip
Patterson. Happens to me when I'm filling out my bracket a lot too. You know, you're just like, you look at like Carolina, even they're not going to make the tournament, but Carolina's like an 8 seed, you know, and they're playing Baylor in a 1 seed in the second round. You're just like,
what do they say about the Final Four? Like the sum of the seeds usually is what, like less than 12 or something like that? Or
usually, yeah.
Or something along those lines. It's going to be so weird when you put the blue bloods in there. Yeah. They're like just. Visually, that looks right, and then the seeds are going to be like 16, 17, 18. It's going to be like, what the hell is going on?
The total of seeds,
ESPN, and I know we need to go to break. We've been going for a while, but ESPN put out something talking about what did the past Final Four teams look like when February started last year. So just interesting from that point of view. So what did the recent national champions look like on February 1st in 2019? And it says, you'll often hear analysis and writers talk about the legitimate threats to cut down the net in April, but here are some of the recent data that shows that how rarely championship teams come out of nowhere, even if you go back to February. 9 of the past 10 champions were ranked in the top 12 on February 1st, 6th ranked in the top 6. 4 of the past 5 champs were ranked 4th or better. North Carolina was 12th in 2017, to answer another intro of questions above. And then, in case you're curious, 2 of the past 10 teams that were ranked at number 1 entering to February went on to win the title, Villanova in 2018 and then Kentucky in 2012. So just some interesting tidbits that when you're filling out your bracket and everything. I know they're really hitting it hard on the Bracketology show on ESPN Plus, where Joe Lenardi and Jason Fitz have been really promoting that puppy.
Must be nice. Joe Lenardi just carving out his own, like the Mel Kiper of bracketology, just carved out his own lane, invented an entire segment of sports analysis.
I want to go in his bunker.
Yeah?
Did you mark that?
Because that was
216. Did that sound dirty? Jeez. Mind out of the gutter.
If you isolate it and put it in the rest of the mixtape, it's going to sound dirty.
Sounds like he'd go on the Super Bowl halftime show.
Yeah.
There it is. All right, you guys want to take a break here?
Let's go ahead and hit it.
All right, cool. You guys are listening to The V Show, Biggest Biscuit, Dave Skull, and the fabulous Phil Baker, Sales Weasel,
Medium Biscuit,
Host, Hybrid, Extraordinaire.
Whatever you need me to do. If you had the meetings I had today, you would give me 18 different titles.
Well, you guys are the best. Thanks for filling in. You're listening to The V Show here on ESPN 680 105.7.
Welcome back into the V Show. I am Dave Skull, your host today, joined by the fabulous Phil Baker, and Nicky V is back in his spot on the ones and twos back there.
Where I belong.
Apparently, you gave yourself an 8.9, or as you say, 8.7.
Pretty solid, because I had like nine different.
You freestyled that whole sports center.
Dave and I were talking live. I was just sharing how happy I am that he's doing well and he's back here playing radio with us. And then you apparently had one of the best sports centers you've had of the year thus far. So
it's because I didn't expose my body to him. Normally, if I pull my shirt up, he gets really distracted.
Well, yesterday he did that, and I had a solid sports center then, and I didn't even notice.
You didn't notice.
But your eyes down.
You're across from me.
I sensed it. That was a Star Wars EDM remix rejoin. I was using the Force, and I sensed your boob.
Well, congratulations on a phenomenal sports center here on the V Show.
Boob.
Gives him the courage that he needs to not stumble over words.
I wanted to we were talking about this in the break. I wanted to touch on some of the mock draft. It's mock draft season. Is what it is. It's always mock draft season if you're like me, you know, and you want to look at the guys that the Jets aren't going to draft, you know, because it's the Jets are just going to end up drafting another defensive tackle. That's just what they do every year.
But
I heard your disdain for the Jets ownership. It was pretty comical.
Oh, God, the Johnsons. Woody right now is the ambassador to the United Kingdom. So his brother, who apparently is equally as incompetent as an owner, has taken over as like chairman and in his stead. And they hired Adam Gase and then hired a decent GM, Joe Douglas, afterwards. But Joe Douglas has a working relationship with Adam Gase, so he didn't come in looking to, you know, hire his own head coach. So I'm stuck with Adam Gase for the foreseeable future, who's going to ruin Sam Darnold if he hasn't already. And he probably gave him mono somehow there, whatever.
Made out with the same girl.
Yeah. Sam Darnold needs to stop. The process call those ladies up in Jersey?
Oh, yeah.
What did he call?
What didn't he call him, I guess?
That's a good point. Yeah. That's a good darn point.
I am really excited for this NFL draft. I don't know if it's because it's a culmination of it being in Las Vegas and everybody's really going out on floats.
That's the dumbest thing.
I cannot wait to see Roger Goodell just misstep it, and it's going to be fantastic.
But when I heard that news, I was like,
it's Vegas.
Well, the NFL draft is already long and drawn out and way longer than it should be.
What's another 30 seconds?
It takes forever. They're like, how can we make this longer? Let's have them all take a gondola ride to the stage. You know, it's ridiculous.
I don't want anyone to get hurt.
But no, I know
damned,
that's probably going to happen.
Hilarious if something stupid happened.
No,
like
I want Goodell to fall
stuck
into the water. Well, that's what I want.
For the office levers out there with Michael Scott falling into the koi pond. Like, I can't tell you. That was the first. As soon as I saw the renderings with Lamar and Jair, I was just like, oh, I got to put this up there. And then there were already like 200 Michael Scott things. And I'm like, well done, Twitter. Yeah. That's when Twitter is used for the greater good. And everyone was on the same wavelength as me.
Look, every time I see like something happen and I have an obvious joke or something that I'm going to go to Twitter with, I always check the responses to the tweet or something. It's always already there. And I'm like, man, I'm posted anyway.
That's one of the main reasons why. Yeah, I forgot. I paused the halftime show for a little bit and then just to get caught up. And I tweeted something out. And then I was like, oh, man, everybody's already tweeted that. And then it was just like, I forgot to go to live. And that was on me. But again, nonetheless, the joke landed. I think it was the Ali G look doppelganger dancer.
Dude, yeah, that was the first thing everybody said at our Super Bowl party. Like, is that Ali G? Like,
I think Parrot was the only one that knew who it was.
I had no idea.
Didn't he say it was like a Bad Bunny?
Sure.
Is that what they said it was?
No, I've never felt older. I felt like it was me trying to figure out TikTok. Like,
yeah,
that's
exactly
what I felt like. I feel like a peephaw.
By the way, I was dropping off
about on text messages.
I was dropping off a bunch of my bags of clothes at Goodwill the other day, and there was three or four, I don't know if they were high school or college age girls. They were like all dancing in front of a phone, and I was like, "What's going on here?" And they're doing it. They were recording a
TikToking it.
They just in a Goodwill parking lot. Like, what was going on?
Maybe they had good lighting. Aesthetics.
Welcome to the roaring 20s, boys and girls.
It's so ridiculous. I was like, I don't think I'm built for this world anymore.
I'm kind of mad. I don't know if you remember way back.
Tell me how, Nikki. What are you mad about?
All right. There was this website. It was called 5 Second Films. And they were absolutely pee your pants hysterical.
Well, Vine was, there was a lot of
they
great
were
Vine.
R.I.P. Vine. Yeah. They were before Vine.
I remember the 5 Second Films.
Yeah, and then Vine came out. And Phil remembers this. I was rocking a phone that I had no business rocking. Mm-hmm. I was producing here, and it was a backless, like, Palm Pilot. like bastardization.
Yeah, you couldn't keep the charger in.
Yeah, it was bad. It was amazing, and
he'd shake it, and then it would come on. Seriously, he would shake it. You hear something rattle, and then the screen would turn.
Well, that was the iPhone that I broke. I had to shake like a sugar packet. But you're right. This one had a similar trick. This one had a similar trick, but I didn't. I wasn't around for Vine. Like when Vine was, then once Vine disappeared, I got a smartphone, like a real smartphone. So I was mad. I was like, man, I have so many little funny 5-minute haha, not even 5-second funny haha videos. I would have been Vine famous, man. And then now TikTok's come around, and it was like 5 years later, and I'm old now, and I'm like,
you're old.
I want to make TikToks.
Don't be a TikTok star. You're too old. I do what you want. I'm just kidding.
437-9680, the UPS jobs text line. If you want to interact with the show, Dave Skoll, Phil Baker, Nick Valvano here. Let's play a new game this hour. Drink every time Phil incorporates a station plug promotion into the middle of the topic discussion.
Phil's a salesman. He's great at this.
No, I'm just reading what's in front of me, baby. Speaking of which, hey, Kentucky basketball looks to bounce back tonight as the Cats take on Mississippi State. Immediately after, did Pat do this on purpose, put Terry Brown first?
I think he did.
Okay, Terry Brown and Jason Entz for the Kentucky Farm Bureau Insurance postgame show on ESPN 680 here from Cal. Player sound plus much more. And then over on 93.9, our boy Nick Curran, co-host. Actually, he's Mike One always. Co-host Nick Curran, voice of the Louisville Women's basketball team. You can hear him over on 93.9, The Ville, with the Jeff Wall Show from Mark's Feed Store in Fern Creek. So there, drink two shots, if you will, on that.
And that's the rule is, if you're listed first in the promo, you get seat one. So the big chair. So I'm just saying, Jason, you've got to defer to Terry Brown.
Ince is going to be here at 3:59 mid-show, just like staring hovering over the store. But appreciate Ince was willing to call in, give a preview of the game tonight, but we had some things, you know, moving around.
We always appreciate his willingness.
Guys, I know we're filling in.
Jason's a great guy.
We only talk to, you know, seat one people. I mean,
he's going to...
Jason, I'm just kidding. We love you.
Yeah, we can segue in with this to the draft discussion. The texter says, did a 7-round mock draft and interesting selections. Lynn Bowden to the Ravens. I don't remember who had – was it Matt Miller that had him going to the Ravens in the 3rd round? Somebody.
This was the one that was retweeted and it's been getting all the traction on Twitter.
Yeah, hit me with it.
Give me a second.
All right, well, anyway, so I would love that.
Yes, the floats to go out in Vegas. I'm excited to see what happens with a large lineman if just making his way out there to shake Goodell's hand. Shakes a little bit.
I hope it's a gondola. That's all I'm saying.
I'm amazed at how many of those really big dudes can't swim. They're just so strong. Like, I feel like just
I was
one,
always a really strong swimmer.
Yeah, I feel
it
like
no matter how fat I was. If they just, because I have huge legs or had huge legs.
If a lineman just learns how to, like, splash right, he could probably like become an Olympian because he's so strong. He would generate so much power. So I really wonder.
That's the thing. I had a lot of wake when I swam, but I could swim very well.
I don't know how deep that water is, but I really want to see someone dressed to the nines and rocking floaties.
I love it. So I would be like, I know Locke brought this up. The Ravens drafting Lynn Bowden in the 3rd round, dude. I would be all for it. That kind of speed, add that to the Ravens' offense. I don't care where he plays, you know. Put that next to Lamar Jackson, and that's huge.
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing. I just found where he was talking about.
Chad Reuter and Matt Miller. Yes.
Okay. Well, it's Matt Miller. Yeah. All right. Matt Miller. Just for anybody who, like I said, it's mock draft season. For anybody who is into NFL mock drafts, I'm a huge Matt Miller guy. He does full 7-round mocks, which are absolutely ridiculous to try to do, but it gives you a good idea of what your team could possibly be looking for and where your favorite players will land. He has Mekhi Becton going 8th to the Cardinals, which makes me – I mean, I'm very happy for Mekhi getting all this traction I've been talking about. For those of us who follow offensive line Twitter very closely like I do, and NFL scouting Twitter, he's been gaining steam since about midseason and some preseason, but he had so much good tape this year with a new coach and a new system that the dude has been on fire in scouting circles. And he went from, I said that he was a first round lock and I thought he'd be top 20. Now it looks like he's closer to a top 15 lock and possibly the first offensive lineman off the board. Just depends on how teams rate him and what he does in the combine. I think he's going to do incredible in the combine with his measurables and some of his strength drills and agility drills. But this particular Matt Miller's mock draft had Bama's Jedrick Ellis going fourth overall. So Mekhi was the second offensive tackle picked. He actually had four offensive tackles in the first 11 picks, including Tristan Wirfs from Iowa, the 10th pick to the Raiders, and Andrew Thomas from Georgia going to my Jets. Couldn't possibly be right. There's no way they draft an offensive lineman. That's too smart and too necessary and definitely an area of need. So we're obviously going to pick a kicker.
Yeah, I'm seeing on CBS as well, Mekhi Becton potentially going to the Dolphins, which getting Devontae Parker down there. But it's interesting to see just where he's kind of all over the board from 18. I know you said he had some had going in the top 10, but yeah, his stock just continues to keep rising.
Well, see, Andrew Thomas was the early, like, you know, first offensive tackle off the board during the season, and he's kind of lost some steam. He has less of an upside. Like, I think Mekhi Becton has the potential to be the first offensive lineman off the board with that tremendous upside. He's still young. He's only a junior. You know, he's coming out at age 21, and he's gigantic. He's 6'7", 6'8", depending on what measurement you look for, and he's 365. But he also moves like a freaking ballerina. The kid is the whole package, and he was a better pass blocker as a freshman than run blocker, which is absolutely rare. Like, normally young offensive linemen pick up run blocking much quicker. You know, the technique is simpler. You know, Everybody knows how to put a helmet on a helmet and drive the man off the ball. Well, you get really sophisticated pass rushers in college compared to high school. The speed of the game It's amazing how much faster college football is than high school football. It blew my mind. After like 2 weeks of practice, after 3 days of practice, I was like, I wish I could go back and play high school football again, because I feel like I'm playing a different game now. You know, it's insane. And they have sophisticated pass moves. They're incredibly fast, and they usually can beat you to a spot. With run blocking, you're generally beating a man to a spot. You're coming, you know the snap count. You're coming off the ball, and you're putting a helmet on a helmet and blocking a man, generally. Generally, run blocking is easier to pick up at the college level than pass blocking. Pass blocking technique, I mean, it usually takes a few years. But Mekhi was one of the highest rated freshmen in the country, and pass blocking was his strength as a freshman. And he's a road grader in the run blocking game too. He's a complete package. But he was that rare. You knew he was going to be good, not just because he's a massive, but as a freshman he was so polished already in the pass blocking game. So I think he's a 10, 15-year left tackle in the NFL, and I hope he falls to 11 with the Jets, but I'm 90% sure he's not going to.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, on NFL.com, yeah. I'm all over the place, kind of just looking at different mock drafts. This is from Chad Reuter coming down saying he has him going 14th to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers with the fighting Mark Ennis's. But yeah, all over the board from there, from you said 10 to probably 18, but it looks like going to be a first round pick. So that's exciting considering
I've seen him at fourth too. So like, I mean, I'm telling you, he's looking I think that at the end of the day, he's going to be drafted before the Jets pick at 11.
I'm excited just to see the free agency draft, everything with the QB controversies of, is Brady going where? All these young QBs coming out there. It's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, what are the Bucs going to do? Like, there's a ton of teams that are in flux at the quarterback position, which seems to be a yearly thing. But there's a lot of – it's interesting this year because there's a lot of them, like the Raiders and the Bucs, who have young quarterbacks that they're kind of like, it's, you know, what are we going to do with them? Are we going to commit to them long term, or are we cutting bait and running right at this point? So I think Jameis – it sounds to me like Bruce Arians is ready to move on from Jameis, and I don't blame him.
Great. The interceptions and touchdown status. One of my favorite things of all time.
Sorry. Texter says Mekhi Becton is 6'7 or 6'8, depending on what gas station he's leaving. Just a comment on that. I'm about 6'1 and 3/4. Okay. I'm a shade under 6'2. And there's been two gas stations in the last couple weeks where I've walked out and the 6-foot line is like 3 inches above my head. I'm like, what's
– yeah.
Who put this up?
Okay, that makes me feel better because I was
– like, I'm not 5'9".
Nick is very self-conscious of a lot of things, so I could just see him on his tippy toes. So like, my
like,
driver's
this is
license
not accurate.
Says –
no.
This is not accurate.
No.
What? Somebody reset this. Sorry.
No.
Give me your license and come over here and measure up.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be a blast. Just keep it up with it. I'm a psychopath, and when it comes to sports talk radio, I'll just bounce around, especially with our sister station out in Kansas City, Super Bowl. I'll just bounce around to see. I was like, well, all right. Yeah, obviously, the Super Bowl post-game show, awesome to listen to. Listening to the losing side of it out in San Francisco and whatnot, but it's really cool to see how they other markets that have NFL teams, like Buffalo, for randomly. I know that's a random market to choose, but how they evaluate what their needs are in terms of how their team can go forward. And it's just interesting to see where they could get so worked up over an offensive lineman. But like when you're ingrained like in an NFL market and the needs of like where you need to
you
help
know
your
me.
Team grow. Oh, yeah.
I've been screaming about the Jets. The Jets haven't drafted a first-round offensive lineman since 2004 when they drafted Nick Mangold and DeBrickashaw Ferguson both in the first round. And that worked out pretty well for them. I don't understand why we haven't drafted another first-round offensive lineman and we haven't had elite offensive lines. In fact, we've had very much the opposite several years. This year, I think we're the 28th ranked offensive line in the league, 28th or 29th, and we can't invest money in the offensive line. Drives me crazy. They signed the Raiders' best offensive lineman in the offseason last year, and then he had a falling out with the coach, and they cut him in like the fourth. It drives me nuts the way the Jets operate, and will probably, like I said, draft another defensive tackle that will flame out in 3 years, or as soon as he gets good, he'll demand a trade. So I'm excited about it. I'm excited to see what the Jets do. It'll be Kyle Brady over Warren Sapp all over again.
And you can listen to that NFL draft right here on ESPN Louisville. So drink another shot, if you will, right here on the V Show Texter.
I'm really excited. Tom Brady isn't leaving the NFC or the AFC East. He's just not. I think that, and I said it the other day, I think that his value is to the Patriots and almost the Patriots alone at this point. Like he's not the quarterback he used to be. He doesn't have the arm. He doesn't have the quick release he used to have. He's the GOAT. I'm not like a bitter Jets fan. I'm just saying watching him play this year, I feel like he has value to the Patriots system, but if he went to another team, he wouldn't have the same. He doesn't add value anymore, in my opinion.
Do you go to another team? Well, I mean, if you go 8-8 next year, even respectable, you go to a team.
You'd be 43.
You'd be 43 going 8-8. I just feel like if he goes anywhere and isn't elite, then people are gonna just be like, "Well, he wasn't that good.
Spilling the beans about how his real estate buddy was helping Tom Brady find property in Vegas. I was like, he's like, yeah, picked. He's like, he got like, picked up by Sefty and all.
If you pull the curtain back, he probably has property in about 15 different NFL towns. So it's like, the Patriots were rumored to be willing to pay him $30 million next year. I don't see him leaving for either a slight pay bump or definitely not a pay cut. So unless if the Patriots are willing to give him $30 million next year, I think he's a Patriot.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that's what I think, especially, I mean, you see the Hulu commercial during there. He ain't earned for money, so it's just something what he wants
to do. Well, his wife makes twice as much money as three times as much money as he. She makes like something like $100 million every single year with her modeling and her contracts. So he's fine. Money ain't an issue. He'll stay in New England next year if they want him, which I'm sure they do, and they'll win 10 games just because they play the Jets and the Dolphins twice a year. The Bills are actually decent now, so I do think it's the Bills' division next year, though, like anybody cares.
Well, yeah, it's going to be – well, look, I love keeping up with all these NFL teams and what they're going to do in the offseason and everything, and I've really gotten into just listening to other markets and other – what their team's needs are for that leading up to the draft and free agency. It's just fascinating thing nonetheless. Hey – Texter, I'm going to promote something else coming up later here in a bit. Tonight,
this man?
Yes. Ohio State at Michigan, 6:45 on ESPN 680. Louisiana Tech and WKU, 8:30 on Thursday. And then Duke and North Carolina coming up 5:45 on ESPN 680 on Saturday on ESPN Louisville as we inch closer to March Madness and Championship Week and the Final Four on that front. So that's what they call a transition in the biz.
That's what exciting. I'm told. Yeah, Phil's just good at this. No,
I got. Oh, here he is.
Andy Sweeney, ladies and gentlemen,
the program director.
Oh, by the way, this mic sounds terrible. Mm-hmm. Holy cow! No, listen. There's one thing you guys are missing with the entire. I'm going back. I'm catching up on the Mekhi Becton talk.
Hit me with it.
And it's you, Biscuit, and it's Nick Valvano, and it's the stink of Bob Valvano. It's the Jets. If you guys were talking about that mock draft, were you not? Him going 11th to the Jets, that's the worst possible place he could go. You don't want that. You don't want that blood on your hands, Biscuit. You understand what I'm saying?
Offensive linemen can outshine like he will be a bad team.
He will be a bust. Or he'll be Joe Thomas.
Joe Thomas is a great offensive tackle for 12 years on a bad team, you know, but he's a Hall of Famer.
He was the saddest man ever. Your Jets and Adam Gase are going to absolutely ruin Mekhi Becton.
See, I'm hoping Adam Gase isn't there for more than another year.
Oh, he's the franchise. He's the face. Crazy he's the Gase face.
You're killing me. Come on. You know me.
Gase
look,
of the franchise. Look, it's going to be your fault. It's going to be all your fault.
You know me. I root against the Jets picking Louisville players when I feel like they're ruinable. Like Lamar Jackson, I didn't want him anywhere near the
wait
Jets.
Wait till Mark Blankenbaker.
Teddy Bridgewater didn't want him anywhere.
Wait till Blankenbaker figures out the Jets stink. He's going to be ethering them every Tuesday or every Wednesday morning with Diener.
Him and Process are going to fight over
didn't
that.
You know the Jets just suck? Settle down, Blankenbaker.
I'm pretty vocal about how terrible my Jets are. You should have heard me by now. Come on.
All right, that's it.
No, there's no way Mekhi Becton lasts till the 11th pick, in my opinion. Not anymore. Not with the juice he's got. So he's safe.
All right. Hope juicy didn't mean steroids. That's a whole different thing.
I can't wait to see Process and Blankenbaker.
Thanks, Sweeney. You can hear Andy Sweeney.
Yeah, 10 minutes
at 3 o'clock. He's ready. He's ready to come out and ether me for another 3 hours in my Jets. But 3 to 6 to the take. Who does he have on
Pat 40
on
today? So
Pat 40. That's right. He moved to Tuesdays. He used to be on Wednesdays.
Around. Yeah, but it's going to be a fun show. I just saw the 40 minutes tweeted out by Pat 40.
The esteemed Pat 40. I mean,
we were talking about that during the break. You got Billy Reid of Sports Illustrated and Hall of Fames in the morning. You had Lachlan, who you turn on your TV. You got Spectrum. After us, you got the 21st? Was it in the Jason Barrett Sports? You had the PD?
Oh, yeah. He was he was 21.
And then you had us.
Our station was 24. V-Show was 21 in the middays.
Lots of awards going around.
Diener was 14th, and Jason was 10th, I think.
Yeah, already, which is amazing.
Baller.
Yeah.
The family.
Texter says this year's offensive line, a middle linebacker, is not deep, so you may see an early run on them. That's what I was talking about. Deepest is wide receiver, so you may see some steals in late. It's indicative when you see these mock drafts. They had 4 offensive tackles in the first 11 picks and no other offensive linemen for the rest of the first round. That's when you know like there will most likely be an early run on offensive linemen if there's only 4, you know, that are garnering a first round grade in most people's opinion. So you might see some late, like, you know, you usually get a guard or a center, a couple of late first rounders. They don't like usually to spend an early rounder on an interior lineman, but that's receiver's ridiculously deep. I mean, you just take.
Oh, I was just looking at the mock draft, and I was like, receiver.
Just take the SEC receivers, and there's like 6 of them in the first round between Bama and LSU, and it's ridiculous. But yeah.
I thought Nick chimed in. I can't see Nick from here.
I could only, on this side of the glass, I only get half the conversation when Andy came on, but Andy kind of brought up a good point. Are we going to ruin Mekhi if we get him?
Offensive linemen are a little more immune, I feel like, to being ruined. Like, position players, you can ruin them if you bring them to the wrong spot. Offensive linemen can play well regardless of where you put them if they're a great talent.
But I Googled a photo of Joe Thomas. Look, I don't want Mekhi to be Joe Thomas. The photo really did look sad.
He lost like 100 pounds after he stopped playing. He's happy.
Now he's happy, but there were, like his Wikipedia photo is him. It looks like he's just perpetually smelling a fart.
He was
in Cleveland forever. So,
he was
the
best offensive tackle in the league, and he rotted in Cleveland for like 12 years.
I keep
thinking, but he was the best offensive lineman in the league for the majority of that time.
I keep thinking about
one of the three best.
As the draft continues to grow, it's in Las Vegas. It's going to
Kansas
City.
I love that they move it around
now.
Yeah, it was cool. It was in Nashville last year.
Yeah, it looked great on TV. But I'm curious to see if they continue to do this to all the NFL cities. Like, what iconic places? Like, no, you've heard Drew's rants about Cincinnati. There's some bright spots in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
But where do they put it if it's in Cincinnati or Buffalo?
Like, I already see the gears turning in Phil's head
about this is where it goes.
NFL draft to Buffalo.
No, not for that. I'm just curious to see what happens in regards to just like if Jacksonville. Everybody talks about how Jacksonville's so spread out. Like, what iconic places do you put it in?
Kind of like Louisville, spread out.
Yeah. Real quick, breaking news: Mark D'Antoni has stepped down as the head coach at Michigan State, citing a desire to spend more time with his family. So I know we're kind of bouncing all over the place, but that coming down the ticker real quick.
Whatever happened to that scandal?
Dude, that athletic department has skated for the most part, considering how much scandal and turmoil there should have been there, and the stories that have been uncovered. It feels like they've largely skated.
And then Stuart Mandel tweeting out, "Why wait so long to decide on this, you ask?" And then has a little blurb from his contract. Mark D'Antonio due a 4.3 bonus if he's at Michigan State's head coach on January 15th, 2020.
I love that he waited a couple weeks. You know, what I mean? Like, he waited until January 15th
instead of my house in the Hamptons.
instead of stepping down on the 16th, you know, he waited a few weeks. He's like, just make it look natural, you know.
And again,
act natural.
we talk about this multiple times, but I think, and I know we're inching closer, Andy's tried to get in here, but you go back to Scott Satterfield getting an up-and-coming coach like that. That's another big-time college football program opening for that. So that's good. Another good get for Louisville, I guess. A lot of people obviously wanted Brom, but to get a guy like the biggest turnaround in college.
Dude, Satterfield's killing it. I'm cool with not getting Brom at this point. Texter says, "You underestimate the cancer that is New York Jets football. Trust me, nobody in this building knows the cancer that is New York Jets football more than I do." I am intimately aware
of
how devastating New York Jets football is. I'm just saying that a generational talent at offensive tackle can generally shine without the need of a nurturing infrastructure. In fact, he could be fine.
That was such a great statement. That's like saying a rhinoceros calf can survive the harshness without any love or sustenance in the Serengeti.
What I'm saying is, McGuire, like a quarterback, you can ruin a quarterback. Like they're in the midst of ruining Sam Darnold with the offense they run and that garbage coach they have.
Even the ladies of the night were trying up there.
Well, he needs to stop playing spin the bottle on the weekends, and maybe he can stay healthy for more than half of the season. Just amazing to me that he was sidelined by the same disease you get by being like an overly eager 15-year-old.
We were talking about
on spring break.
What are the things that we do for our website? We do an injury report and everything, and then you never wish injuries upon any players, but we were a little light. And I just hear a lock of we're talking about. It was like, can we put Sam Darnold in there? Like, how about? And I was like, I don't know if that's necessarily their cup of tea they're looking for, but I'll ask. Mono.
That meme was great though. The point,
the kissing disease. The point, yeah.
Yeah, let me get the who's it? I'm John O'Blank, the guy from Court Physical Therapy. They always do the injury stuff. I want to hear Patty Ice talking with him about swapping spit.
That'd
be amazing.
Well, how can you avoid getting mono? Like, stop kissing so many people.
I mean, the fact they let that get released is just, I love that so much.
It would have been better off if they had
illness.
Released literally anything else.
Illness. That's all you need.
He had an inflamed gallbladder. Or no,
it was pancreas, I think it was part of it.
Pancreas? Spleen.
Spleen. That's right. No, pancreas was me.
Well, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It's always fun to do the show with you. Nick, who's in tomorrow?
Hopefully, God willing, Pops is back. Pops is back. But coming up next, it's the Take with Andy Sweeney. Mike DeCourcy at 5.
Mike DeCourcy coming at 5. Lots of luminaries. This has been The V Show. We'll see you.
You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded. Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.
With UPS, future you gets seriously pumped. As a package handler, you'll have a great job this season. Make up to $20 per hour after bonuses for a 25-hour work week. Future you goes further than you imagine. Find out what you'll become at upsjobs.com.